start.
Good morning. People standing, can you follow me?
We're going to start it. I now note that the hour has come and this hearing is called to order. This is the public hearing of the City Council Committee on the Environment. The purpose of this public hearing is to hear testimony on resolution number 240347. Ms. Jones, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Present.
Councilmember Ober?
Present.
Vice Chair Bath?
Present.
Chair Gaudier?
Present. Thank you, Ms. Jones. Joining us today is also Minority Leader Kimber Brooks. Minority Leader Kimber Brooks, who is the sponsor of the legislation. I note for the record that a quorum of this committee is present and this hearing is called to order. So good morning, everyone. I'm very excited about this hearing today. Last year, the city released its first ever urban agriculture plan. This launch represented the first time that the city formally committed to being a partner rather than a barrier to our urban farms and gardens. I'm proud to represent many grassroots green spaces in the 3rd District, and I want to acknowledge and thank everyone here today from a West or Southwest Philadelphia-based urban farm or community garden. Not only do urban farms provide neighbors the chance to build community, gain valuable skills, beautify their blocks, improve air quality, and access fresh produce, but they help us to reduce violence as well. Greening vacant lots reduces violent crime by 29% in the surrounding areas. A 2018 study conducted by Penn Medicine's Dr. South found that greening every vacant lot across Philadelphia could prevent up to 350 shootings each and every year. So yes, urban farms foster food sovereignty, promote sustainability, and build community, but they must also be a part of the conversation when we're talking about violence prevention. Historically, the city's policies did not recognize the importance and permanence of urban and community gardens. But I am proud that this body has already taken steps to reverse this trend. A couple years ago, we enacted the Community Land for Community Benefit legislation, which makes it easier for urban farms to acquire city-owned vacant land in the 3rd and 4th Council districts. And thanks to Minority Leader Brooks' leadership, the city is finally buying back many of the lots that it sold to U.S. Bank, allowing us to preserve long-established farms and gardens. But we still have a very long way to go until urban farmers and gardeners have the support and resources that they deserve from our city. I look forward to this hearing so that we can examine the progress that we've made since the introduction of the Philadelphia Urban Agriculture Plan and ensure we are moving quickly and collaboratively to achieve the plan's goals. Thank you so much. And I'll ask if any of my colleagues have any opening remarks.
Thank you so much, Chair Gaudier. Thank you everyone for coming out. It just warms my heart to see all my garden friends from around the city all in one place. We met and had these conversations moving up to this point. So welcome. This hearing on urban agriculture means so much to me. For me, garden has been a way to connect me with nature, to care for myself and my loved ones, and to claim the inheritance of my ancestors who lived so close with the land. For me, urban agriculture means creating and caring for vibrant green community spaces in our neighborhoods, places where children play and learn, where elders gather and enjoy the shade, where families live in food deserts, can access fresh food and healthy food. We have hundreds of these spaces all over the city, and 70% of them are in high poverty neighborhoods, where the majority of the residents are people of color. Many of these community gardens used to be vacant lots that attracted trash and crime until neighbors came together to transform them into beautiful places for the good of the neighborhood. Now these gardens provide a plethora of benefits for the people who live near them and for the city as a whole. A study by Gina South at University of Pennsylvania showed that cleaning and greening lots is the highest need neighborhoods reduce crimes by up to 29%. This connection between green space and public safety is at the heart of the safer, greener neighborhoods pillar of my plan for Philly families. I've included a one-page summary of that pillar in the materials for each member of this committee, and I'm happy to provide copies of the full plan to anyone who's interested. Many of you know that I'm a firm believer in the power of community, so you understand why I'm passionate about these gardens. They are the living, growing embodiment of people coming together to take care of their families, their neighborhoods, and our planet. In Dr. South's study, residents of neighborhoods with clean, green divides also reported feeling safer and had up to 69% decrease in depression. In my first term, I worked with community gardens to buy back the rooms of over 90 plots of vacant land that had been transformed by community gardens. But we must do more to protect and expand these vital resources. We must commit $1 million in city funding to the Food Justice Initiative, a partnership between the Department of Public Health and the Reinvestment Fund, which provides grants that have allowed many community-led gardens to flourish over the past few years. We must also increase funding for the Department of Parks and Rec, which created the Urban Agriculture Grant and which supports a variety of urban agriculture initiatives across the city. And finally, we must reform the land bank so that communities can take ownership of their gardens and continue to transform vacant lots in their neighborhoods. In Philadelphia, we have a long history of urban agriculture and community gardens that have nurtured and stabilized working class communities. But rising property values, pressure from developers, are threatening the land that has been restored by our community gardens over generations, as well as land that could become productive community space in the future. In 1996, Philadelphia had attained a home to over 500 community gardens. But over the past 25 years, we've lost a third of those gardens. Once the land is sold, we never get it back. We lose the opportunity to make Philadelphia a greener, more beautiful city for our children. As lawmakers, it is our responsibility to protect these community spaces and to support the people who care for them. So thank you, Councilmember Cartier, for chairing today's hearing and for her steadfast support of community gardens. I hope you all will take advantage of all the information and insight included in the Urban Agriculture Plan, as well as the testimony provided today, that you will join me in growing the seeds and nurturing the roots of urban agriculture in our city. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Number one, I wanted to thank everyone for being here today. I also wanted to just make a statement. I noticed, my apologies, unfortunately, I had to leave a little bit early, but I did notice in the commissioner's remarks that one of the priorities of the administration is our priority as well. As the former chair of the Committee on Parks and Recreation, we have been working very hard to ensure that there was green growing space within the public lands that exist around recreation centers and parks, and I just wanted to say that I'm really pleased and proud that it is a part of Mayor Parker's commitment to the city of Philadelphia. And I know that you're going to highlight it further in your remarks to come, so I just wanted to say that I think that this is really an important step forward as we really work to bring and funnel people into our recreation centers and into our parks, that once they are there, they see this as yet another opportunity and activity for the community that's benefited. So I just wanted to thank you for your efforts around that.
I echo those sentiments. Thank you so much. Councilmember O'Rourke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to just say good morning to all our esteemed guests who are here, to my fellow committee members, and to our guests on this committee today, the moderator leader, Kim Brooks. I don't want to take up too much time because we're here from and to learn from all the people who are here. Local experts on urban agriculture. But I'm looking forward to hearing more about how green spaces have a positive impact on physical, mental, and community health, and how that in turn fosters a safer block, a safer neighborhood, and a safer city, which so many have spoken for a number of years about. beyond hearing about urban gardens and farms, I'm trying to see more of them. And I just want to talk about it. We want to see. Let's put our money where our mouth is. I've been glad to visit Greenwood Green Acres a few weeks ago, alongside Councilman Nina Hamid, and we will be at the Woodlands in a few days. But I'm trying to get a taste of urban agriculture citywide. So some of you will be hearing from our office pretty soon so that we can actually materialize that. And I hope that we'll find some time to get our hands very good in the coming months. Thank you again for being here and working to help build a better city in all the ways that we can.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here to really underscore what my colleague just said about the role of green spaces, just connecting with Mother Nature is critical. So when I grew up in Bangladesh as a little girl, we had a garden where we had chickens. We raised vegetables, and that has imprinted me forever, the role that they. I was the only child, my brother was much older and then left home, and I would spend a lot of time in that green space, and I want our children in this city to understand what that gives you. So they, you know, to grow something, you need your hands, you need to put dig up the soil, you need two hands. You can't be on your own when you're doing some work like that. So, and watching your food grow, the patience it takes to seed something, put down as a seed, the seedling, and how it becomes actual food on your table is something many of the children don't know. They just think it's in the grocery store, somehow it comes packaged somehow. The work that's been done by our urban gardeners in Philadelphia is amazing. In spite of so many odds, you have kept at it. Those who've been doing it for many, many years. The garden my colleague and I visited has been around over 40 years, and it's time they were looking for a transition to hand it over to our younger generation. And that will only happen if we create welcoming spaces, if we hear what it is they want to see in their gardens and in their green spaces. So I'm very grateful to Councilmember Kendra Brooks for making this a priority, and I look forward as the Chair of Public Health, the role green spaces play in our overall health. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Jones, would you now read the title of the resolution?
Resolution 240347, authorizing the Committee on the Environment to hold hearings to examine the progress made since introduction of the Philadelphia Urban Agricultural Plan to convene agencies and stakeholders needed to make further progress and to create an implementation strategy to expeditiously meet the goals of the plan.
The clerk will please call the first panel of witnesses to testify on the resolution.
Commissioner Susan Slauson of Parks and Recreation. Jennifer Acquiante, Food Policy Coordinator with the Philadelphia Department of Health. And Sarah Vernon Sturman, Chief Program Officer of the Reinvestment Fund.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Ash.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Susan Slauson, Commissioner of Parks and Recreation. Is this one?
Oh, it is one.
Good morning, everyone. Ash Richards, Director of Urban Agriculture, Philadelphia Parks and Recreation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Gallier and committee members. My name is Susan Slauson, and I serve as Commissioner of Philadelphia Parks and Recreation. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss the progress made since the introduction of the Philadelphia Urban Agricultural Plan, Growing from the Root. Here with me today is Ash Richards, Urban Agriculture Director, who has pioneered the work developed in the city's first ever Urban Agricultural Plan. Can we give Ash? I'm pleased to appear before you today on behalf of Mayor Parker's administration and the department in support of the Urban Agriculture's 10-year plan. We recognize the importance of investing in urban agriculture to transform our food system, enrich our environment, and stabilize our communities. The plan addresses the systems, structures, resources, and policies necessary to sustain and grow urban agriculture in Philadelphia and nurture a more just local food system. In 2019, PPR began work on the citywide urban agriculture plan called Growing from the Root. The first plan of its kind for Philadelphia focuses on values of transparency, racial and economic justice, and inclusion. The Urban Ag Plan was publicly launched 1 year ago in April 2023. Growing from the Root is a plan commissioned by the city and grounded in community organizing. PPR worked with community-based partners to co-develop the plan, Soil Generation of Black and Brown. It's a Black and Brown grassroots coalition of Philadelphia growers and advocates and Interface Studio, a Philadelphia-based city planning firm. PPR led the plan's development, but its success will rely on collaboration between many city agencies, grassroots and nonprofit organizations, philanthropic partners, growers, and residents across the city. As a project of the City of Philadelphia, with community values at the center, we are working to co-create a culturally competent and equity-based approach to ensure residents most impacted are engaged and represented in the planning. The project team carried out the process according to the values of transparency, racial and economic justice, and inclusion. The goals of the plan are to increase land security for growers, access to growing space in all neighborhoods, and stewardship of the land. Build long-term support for urban agriculture initiatives into the city's infrastructure, policies, and programs. Invest in existing and new local systems necessary to support a sustainable, just, and equitable food system in Philadelphia. To build long-term support for locally sourced nutritious meals and increase fresh food access into the city's infrastructure, policies, and programs. To be accountable to existing zero-waste communities and create new ones. To recognize the role urban agriculture can play in the lives and livelihoods of people and communities. The purpose is to establish a 10-year framework for investing in urban agriculture and food justice. To uplift Philadelphia's rich history of urban farming and gardening. To confront the legacy of structural racism and land-based oppression in the city. To outline the resources, policies, processes, and programs necessary to sustain urban agriculture as a permanent use in Philadelphia for future generations. And to provide recommendations to the City of Philadelphia and its partners on how to best support, coordinate, and strengthen their work and community work in urban agriculture. PPR has taken significant strides to meet the plan's goals since its release in 2023 in April. I will share a few of urban agriculture's accomplishments. Farm Philly has initiated the implementation of the recommended 1.10 to promote community gardens and farms in the city as cultural resources that should be acknowledged in the telling and preserving of all Philadelphia's histories. Also, Farm Philly has successfully spearheaded the establishment of the Eastwood Community Garden Support Coalition, fostering collaboration between city agencies and community partners. This effort has significantly strengthened support and resources for one of the city's oldest and most thriving community gardens, highlighting our dedication to strategic collaboration and sustainable urban agriculture initiatives. Farm Philly has implemented also 1.13, established a land access program that provides long-term affordable leases on public park land for growers citywide. The land access program provides access for residents who want to start a community garden, farm, orchard, or food forest on parkland, and an interest form and application has been translated into 6 languages, ensuring accessibility citywide. The program is being shared across our partner networks to raise awareness regarding the opportunity to create urban agriculture projects on parkland. There are 2 gardens that have been established thus far, and the program is being shared across our partner networks to raise public awareness. Farm Philly has also initiated the implementation of 1.14, facilitating collaboration between PPR and Rebuild Philadelphia to evaluate potential and the need for garden creation or preservation at Rebuild Recreation Center. So while those projects are going on, we'll make sure this is included. Farmville and Rebuild are actively working on rebuilding and preserving community gardens at Francis Myers and Kings Esson Recreation Center. Farmville has also implemented 2.12, explore the feasibility of establishing a staff agriculture and horticulture hub in West Fairmont Park as a central infrastructure for local food production and environmental stewardship. The Agriculture Resource Center is in development and is expected to open to the public in the winter of 2024. It will serve as a centralized public tool library and resource center for the city's gardening, farming, horticulture, and environmental stewardship community. Farmville has implemented support safe fair farmers market operations. Farmville collaborated with the Department of Public Health, the Food Trust, securing a farmers market promotion program, a grant of $500,000. A farmers market advisory group has been established to improve operator and consumer processes, increase government support, and raise public awareness. We produce over 4,000 pounds of fresh, organically grown produce. All food was donated to community partner organizations, Parkside Association, and Mount Vernon DC, farm volunteers, PowerCorp members, and local food fridge. Farmville held 27 weekly volunteer farm days from June through November, hosted monthly community harvest and gardening events at the farm with partner organizations such as Girl Trek, We Walk, Healing Through the Land, and Tiny Trekkers, as well as two student field trips for local schools and rec centers. We've engaged over 400 volunteers from May through November with over 50 repeat farm volunteers. Engaged 15 PowerCorp PHL members in urban agriculture workforce development with 17 weekly on-site work days. Over 500 community members actively gardened at 18 garden sites. Over 25,000 pounds of food was grown at the gardens for families to eat and share within their communities. Over 3,000 pounds of food was donated to food programs such as Ready, Willing, and Able and Get Fresh Daily and other food distribution sites such as Rhoda's Shalom, Waters Memorial African Methodist Episcopal Church, and Broad Street Ministries. We work days with PowerCorp's PHL, engaging 12 PowerCorp members in garden maintenance projects. Hundreds of pounds of food was grown and donated to students and community members at recreation centers, as well as community food programs. We celebrate the major accomplishments that Parks and Recreation's Farm Building Program has achieved in 1 year since the launch of the Urban Agriculture Plan, while also acknowledging the work that remains to be done. Future initiatives include the Urban Agriculture Task Force, more public programming, and an expansion of community compost network. This plan is not only a vision for the future, but a roadmap that is continuously being informed. There are some minor updates that will be incorporated into a future amendment, and I will send all members of council a revised copy when they become available. And for all new council members that have not received the initial plan, we'll make sure that we send that as well. And I'd like to thank you for your support of the Urban Agricultural Plan, and Ash and I are extremely happy to answer any questions. Ash will probably be answering most of the questions.
Wonderful. Let's see. Do we have Jennifer Appelmonte? Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Jennifer Appelmonte. Good morning, Chair Gauthier, Vice Chair Bass, and members of the Committee on the Environment. I'm Jennifer Ecolante, Food Policy Coordinator for the Philadelphia Department of Public Health in the Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss progress related to the Urban Agriculture Plan and opportunities for advancing and supporting recommendations outlined in the plan. The Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention is dedicated to reducing the burden of chronic disease and injury by creating a healthy, just, safe, livable community for all Philadelphians. A livable community provides adequate resources to support health, safety, and quality of life for all people, regardless of their race, wealth, age, physical ability, and other factors. This includes health-promoting infrastructure, community assets, and services such as housing, green spaces, transportation, and healthy and culturally appropriate food. But we know the challenges that face us. Poverty and high food costs continue to impact families' ability to afford healthy foods and contribute to food insecurity in Philadelphia. Gun violence and crime traumatize communities and limit use of parks and public spaces. Approximately 40,000 vacant lots exist in the city and contribute to blight and safety concerns. Climate change and extreme heat are a threat to our environment and can exacerbate chronic conditions. Supporting urban agriculture efforts can help address many of these challenges and aligns with Mayor Parker's promise of a safer, cleaner, greener city with access to economic opportunity for all. Urban agriculture is often thought of as just growing food, but it's much more than that. It supports efforts to enhance the local food system, builds community resiliency, and promotes food and nutrition security. Many of the active gardens and farms in the city are located in areas that have both high rates of poverty and also have fewer stores that sell fresh produce. Urban agriculture also contributes to safe, healthy, and green environments. Turning vacant lots into green spaces can reduce firearm violence. Urban agriculture is connected to physical and psychological health benefits. It also preserves cultural food growing practices and traditions in our city. Our division has a history of supporting urban agriculture in Philadelphia. We work very closely with Parks and Recreation. We funded new farmers markets in areas of the city that lacked access to healthy and affordable foods. We implemented the Philly Food Box program, a nutrition incentive for SNAP recipients to increase their purchasing power for fresh fruits and vegetables at farmers markets. Currently, we support and promote farmers markets throughout the city by maintaining our farmers market finder tool and provide ongoing coordination and technical assistance to market operators. With state health funding, we supported Parks and Recreation's Farm Philly program by installing raised beds and new signage at community gardens to promote accessibility and awareness and help to fund the soon-to-come Agriculture Resource Center, which will serve as a one-stop shop for community members that want to grow their own food. In 2019, in partnership with Reinvestment Fund, our division launched the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. PFJI funds innovative, community-led projects that strengthen Philadelphia's food assets that have historically not benefited from public investments. Our current food landscape contributes to health disparities that disproportionately impact Black and Latino Philadelphians. Past and present structural racism has contributed to systems in which healthy, fresh food is not always accessible and is often unaffordable, while unhealthy options abound and are heavily marketed with the lower income neighborhoods. Solutions to food injustice must be community-informed and embody inclusive and equitable processes. PFJI is one part of our multi-pronged efforts to invest in community partners, strengthen Philadelphia's food assets, and work towards a more just food system. The breadth and depth of organizations doing food justice work in this city is amazing. To date, PFJI has awarded nearly $2 million in grants to 27 grantees to advance community-driven solutions to historic food injustice. And a few of those grantees are also providing testimony today. PFJI prioritized projects led by Black, Indigenous, and people of color, immigrants, people living with disabilities, and those with lived experience of health injustice. Of the 27 PFJI grantees, 25 are BIPOC owned or led, and 18 are owned or led by women. Projects fall into three main categories: food distribution, food business or retail, and urban agriculture. Almost half of the funded projects have supported community gardening or farming in some capacity already. Most projects also include some educational, marketing, or youth development component. One current grantee I'd like to mention is Youth Empowerment for Advancement Hangout, also known as YAP Philly. An organization that works to create safe and authentic hangout spaces by providing culturally relevant engagement and implementing teen-led interventions to address the root causes of violence. With PFJI funding, they were able to complete the launch of their neighborhood market in October, which provides free groceries and nutrition information to families in West and Southwest Philly. The market is mainly led and staffed by 10 young people, and the market has served just under 5,000 families so far. Another current grantee is Iglesias Gardens, which aims to preserve its multi-generational activities for their community, creating harmony and balance of local ecosystems and growing edible fruits, vegetables, and plant medicine. They pay tribute to stolen land and develop a network of support for future generations. With PFJI funding, they hosted planning workshops, provided food safety trainings for community members, and met with a consultant to support the installation of a water line to facilitate access to water for growing plants and for cooking in their outdoor kitchen. Just to name a few additional successes, PFJI has increased the number of meals provided and pounds of produce distributed, provided culinary and gardening workshops to residents, and supported development of gardens, community kitchens, food cooperatives, and retail spaces. So PFJI would benefit from financial expansion and collaboration with other city departments, working to create a just, sustainable, equitable food system that supports our communities, economy, and environment. In the last application round last year, PFJI received 79 applications, totaling $6.1 million, with one-time contributions from the Wells Fargo Open for Business Fund and CHOP's Healthier Together program. We were able to fund just $556,000 of those projects, which is great, but shows there is great need for resources to support this important work. PDPH, the health department, supports the proposal in the resolution for financial expansion of the existing Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative to align with recommendation 1.12 of the Urban Agriculture Plan, which calls for the establishment and sustenance of a food and land justice fund dedicated to advancing equitable access to food and land resources without setting up a duplicative fund. Food justice funds, similar to PFJI, are operating across the country and do receive investment from city government. For example, the Pittsburgh Food Justice Fund invests in community-led projects to address food apartheid. Advocates worked with their city council representatives to secure $3 million in funding in Pittsburgh's 2023 city budget, and implementation of the program is now underway. The Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention is committed to addressing the root causes of chronic disease and injury across our city. We believe that access to healthy, affordable, and culturally appropriate food and safe, vibrant green spaces are central to health and wellness for individuals and communities. Thus, we are committed to partnering with Parks and Recreation, farmers, gardeners, and food justice advocates to support implementation of the Urban Agriculture Plan recommendations to ultimately create a more just local food system in the city. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and your work, and clearly we cannot be, you know, let ourselves be bested by Pittsburgh. So important work to do today. Erica Mines, are you here? Oh, are you testifying today? Oh, okay. You just here in case we need you. Sarah Vernon Sturman? Yes. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sarah Vernon Sturman. Good morning, Chair Gagnier, Vice Chair Bass, and members of the Committee on the Environment. I am Sarah Vernon Sturman, here from, I'm the Chief Program Officer at Reinvestment Fund. Reinvestment Fund is a mission-based lender, a grants administrator and technical assistance provider, and a data analysis organization headquartered here in Philadelphia. Thank you for this opportunity to speak about PFJI. We are committed to building a more equitable, sustainable, and inclusive food system through our various food access programs. Nationally, we are the fund manager for the Healthy Food Financing Initiative, HFFI, for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And locally, we welcome opportunities to work with partners in our hometown, especially with the Department of Public Health, on the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. PFJI is a unique program that has awarded nearly $2 million in grants to 27 grantees to advance community-driven solutions, of which 25 are BIPOC owned or led, and 18 are led by women or owned by women. In the last round, PFJI received 79 applications, which totaled $6.1 million. In addition to our annual funding through the Department of Public Health, through one-time contributions from Wells Fargo Open for Business Fund and CHOP's Healthier Together program, we were able to fund 9 of these programs, totaling $556,000. There is a great need for more resources to support this important work. I'd like to offer a few examples from our grantees. Neighborhood Land Power Project, formerly known as the Urban Tree Connection, has partnered with residents of West Philadelphia's Haddington neighborhood for the past 20 years to develop and sustain community-driven greening and gardening projects. They have worked with neighbors in West Philly to reclaim and transform vacant lots into beautiful, useful community green spaces. They are a BIPOC-led organization whose purpose is to cultivate progressive community leadership through food sovereignty and land justice practices. Alongside their neighbors, they steward 6 community gardens and green spaces that promote sustainable food production, social and ecological well-being, and building community power. In 2022, the loss of one of their sites due to development ignited the deepening of their community organizing efforts to strengthen their ties to the land, food sovereignty, and multi-generational community empowerment. Their efforts have included leading a community and citywide state justice, land justice series to help neighbors and fellow stakeholders learn how to build strong communities that can strategize against displacement. The land that NLPP stewards is not only preserves precious green spaces, but provides education and leadership development of youth and local community members to instill resilience for generations to come. Another example from last year's grantees is the West Philadelphia Bunny Hop, whose mission is to provide free food to people through mutual aid programming that centers the dignity and respect of the neighbors in need. Bunny Hop started as a response to emergency aid during the rise of COVID-19 cases in April 2020. The co-founders, Gina Harris and Katie Brooks, leaned into their network of chefs, farmers, and friends to bring access to fresh produce and prepared foods right to their neighbors' doors. Since April 2020, Bunny Hop has been serving various parts of the city entirely through volunteer labor, distributing produce and prepared meals via pop-ups in public places, home deliveries, and drops at community fridges throughout Philadelphia. They used their PFJI grant award to establish additional community fridges and pantries, incorporate more substantial proteins and meals into their offerings, and develop educational resources on how to establish a distribution site in your own neighborhood. Bunny Hop is just one example of many mutual aid efforts that exist across Philadelphia. Pre and post pandemic, neighbors have served one another and created abundance from scarcity. An expansive urban agricultural plan could provide neighbors and organizers with the opportunity to have access to land and to meet food access needs for people across the city. It is possible to address food access in this city, but it can't be just about redistributing food that is about to expire or pouring dollars into purchasing food from distributors. Neighbors need to learn how to grow food and be connected with what the land can provide. Mutual aid requires everyone's participation in order to be successful. An urban agriculture plan that is inclusive of the needs of the city and its residents would be a tremendous step in the right direction. Reinvestment Fund would be eager to partner with Parks and Recreation, farmers, gardeners, and food justice advocates to support implementation of an urban agricultural plan recommendations. Ultimately, we can work together rather than setting up duplicative funds to create a more just food system with the establishment and sustenance of a food and land justice fund dedicated to advancing equitable access to food and land resources. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for the reinvestment funds investment in this critical work. Before I pass things off to the committee members and the legislation sponsor for questions and comments, I have one question for our city partners, the commissioner and Ash. You all talked, I'm very excited to hear about some of the accomplishments, particularly the Agriculture Resource Center. That sounds very cool. I'm glad to know that that's moving along and will open soon. But I was interested in hearing from you both on the barriers. What have the barriers been to implementing the plan, in the time since it's been launched?
Yeah, I would say thank you. And then also thank you everyone for hearing us and also asking us questions. Really appreciate it, giving us the platform. I would say that the barriers that we have so far with implementing the plan is that there's a few of them. And I think the strongest one is, I say often in this work that land security is the number one issue for growers in Philadelphia, right? The reality is that I don't need to educate anyone on that panel in front of me about how to unravel, as I call, the spaghetti bowl of land issues in Philadelphia, security, acquisition, disposition, etc. It is also not Parks and Rec's purview to dive into those elements because that we are not, the land that we are responsible for is deeded land. So it's supposed to stay open space forever. So we can provide residents of Philadelphia, growers, community stewards, with access to public land, but the key word there is access. That's why our land access program is called Land Access Program. We cannot provide ownership at this moment, right? Because that is a deed-restricted piece of land in parkland, and in order for us to convey that, you have to go through the courts to do that. right? So we've done our best in due diligence to partner alongside of these strategic partners and these strategic minds with the advocates to unravel, you know, the spaghetti bowl of land acquisition and disposition issues and land security issues. But we do, in fact, believe that urban agriculture is a permanent, viable land use that needs to have a path for preservation into the future. If we don't save them now, we will not have them in the future. And if we don't save them now, we will not have them in the future. Once they're gone, they're gone. Right? And there's people in this room today, particularly from Eastwick or from North Square Neighborhood Project, where those gardens are 40, 50 years old. And so oftentimes I say to people, when you see these gardens and they're so vibrant and, you know, vivacious, they're all the benefits you're going to hear from different testimonies today about the benefits, so I won't belabor those points. But if they weren't there 40, 50 years ago, what would be there instead? And think about that, right? Also think about, so the second barrier, I would say, is we have to see the work that's being done, not just as a thought partner of mine, Ashley Gerber, wrote a wonderful article talking about that this work is not a hobby. Yeah. It is, right? It's community stewardship, right? So it's community stewardship. The people in this room who I'm incredibly proud to work alongside of have been stewarding these lots for decades, putting in their own money, blood, sweat, and tears, raising their children, growing old, dying in these gardens, right? And so there's a financial, spiritual, physical, social level of responsibility that we have to work alongside them to see them as stewards, right? So what can we do to sort of step up as a city to work with these folks to preserve these spaces, right? And so stewardship, when you go to a garden, they are actually doing the city a really wonderful favor, right? They're taking lots that have been abandoned, right? Like long-term, landlords who have abandoned those lots, right? And they're turning them into beautiful educational spaces, oases, safe spaces for people to grow old and people to play in, right? So community, seeing people as a community steward, that has also been a challenge, because we have to realize this is a land use, this is one of the only land uses in the city that's unrecognized, right? You have an entire agricultural sector here. If you look at the industrial users, they have a sector, they have a land use. If you look at the developers, they have a sector development, and they have a land use. Commercial, residential, what do the urban agriculture sector have? We don't have one. So we have to sovereignty, right, and self-determination of communities to grow their own food by being a provider of land, resources, and education, right? And so what have we done? We do a lot of fundraising to build up resources like the ARC. The goal for us is that any person, regardless of creed, right, or social status or class, can come to Parks and Rec and be able to get from us free seeds, free tools, free use of, right, education, training, et cetera, compost, mulch, and you can build garden farms all over the city, right? So same way that you can go borrow a book or go to a swimming pool for free, you can also get resources to grow for free, right? That's our vision. So how can we embrace, you know, a budget that would say, all right, let's use tax dollars to not just pour into food access work, where we're giving out food, but also pour our tax dollars into resources that will allow people to grow their own food, right? And so that's, I think, the third thing that I would say is a area where we want to see growth in. And City Council, you know, gave us a wonderful budget. Last year, we were able to bring on 2 urban greening coordinators to build our capacity. So we would love to see that extended to the public services and infrastructure that we're building for urban agriculture into the future.
Thank you so much for those important points. Commissioner, anything to add?
No, I think she's covered it. I believe that stewardship throughout our system is critical to what we do. When you think about the stewardship that you have here today,
we have friends groups. We have 140 friends groups that steward our parks. And I have to say, without those friends groups, we wouldn't be able to manage our parks. So the support that we get from community members, from residents that live in the city, is critical to the work of Parks and Recreation, because there's just no way that we could manage our stewardship. They actually, speaking of stewardship, it's a small group of people, same as agriculture, urban ag, it's a small group of people serving a huge number of volunteers that they work with day in, day out. One person is responsible for 36 parks groups. That turns out to be about 2,000 people. Yeah. And so our stewardship, I want to just, you know, thank those of you that are here, that are working with us, that are providing this here support and making sure that urban agriculture is moving forward. But stewardship throughout the city of Philadelphia is priceless. And it is our responsibility to ensure that we can provide them with the necessary tools, because we need them. We need them to continue to do what they do to support the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you for sharing. And I just want to let the record show that I'm a non-binary person. I use they, them pronouns. Thank you for your future efforts.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to temporarily pass the chairship to Councilmember Overcall and I step up so we can continue with questions for the panel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have any questions? I want to honor our personnel as Councilwoman.
Thank you. Question about some of these gardens. I see from data that is provided that in 2020, there was 399 total gardens and farms, I think that. So of those, how many of those are old industrial sites? And were these remediated and made sure that these were safe to be used as sites?
So, council member, I'm not sure where you got that data from. It's possible that it's attached to someone else's testimony in the room. It could be attached to.
From Philadelphia Urban Agricultural Plan, right from your group, 2023.
Okay, I'm like, what are you looking at over there? So the amount of gardens that are on industrial uses is actually very little. And if you look at the zoning code, so in 2012, the council passed with the City Planning Commission a new zoning code that would allow for urban agriculture to take place in the majority of each of the codes, which is monumental. There's some cities that do not allow urban agriculture to happen in residential areas or commercial areas. We actually allow that to a certain extent. When you see urban agriculture intersecting with the industrial land use codes, you're usually going to see something that's on a greater scale or animal keeping, but we don't have a lot of examples of that, very little in Philadelphia. We do have animal keepers in Philadelphia, of course, but not to the extent of an industrial use. Second to that, I want to talk about safety. So in 2017, the Food Policy Advisory Council, where Erica Mayans is stewarding that group in the Office of Sustainability, we produced a soil safety report for the city of Philadelphia, and we always go back to that. So anytime that the gardeners are establishing new gardens, the nomenclature that we use across the board is to grow into raised beds. If you're going to grow directly into ground, you have to get soil tested, right? And so if you're going to grow on parkland, we definitely require that, growing above ground in raised beds. But sometimes, people can start gardens in their backyard. We highly recommend to do that. Philadelphia is a post-industrial city. It is highly likely that there is lots of lead and other chemicals, heavy metals in our soil. And so we want to make sure people are not growing in that soil directly. And thankfully, there's a lot of resources in Philadelphia to allow people to have access to topsoil and compost for free or at a low cost. So there really is no reason for folks to grow in ground if they don't have to.
And if they did, the soil testing is done by whom? Who bears the cost?
That's a great question, and maybe folks in the room can benefit from this. If you want to get your soil tested, you're typically going to go to your extension office. So our extension office is run by Penn State. So if you look up Penn's Penn State Extension Office, they run the soil tests. And so we're working with them actually to start to figure out how we can make those soil tests more approachable. So when you get your diagnostic back, you're not pulling your hair out and saying, oh my gosh, there's lead in my soil. You kind of have to look at it with a more scientific lens and say, what is acceptable for human consumption, et cetera. So we actually do partner with Penn State to do that work.
And the cost is borne by whom?
To say the cost of what is the cost?
Testing.
Absolutely, yes.
Where's the cost?
Totally, yes. So the cost is not my favorite. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
There's two tests that you can do. There's one test that will show you the nutrients. How much potassium do you have in your soil, right? How much potassium, how much nitrogen? That test is actually somewhat affordable. Let's say it's about anywhere from $15 to $25, and they'll give you an entire list of the nutrients in your soil. The problem that I have with the test, which we are working on, is that if you want to test for heavy metals, that's an additional cost. And I think in the context of Philadelphia, that might be quite unfair. Because if I have a backyard, I want to at least test 10 spots, right, to get a good overview. If you have a community garden, you're looking at dozens, right? So think about this. If I have one test and it's, let's call it $20 for nutrients, plus $30 for the lead and $30 for the other heavy metals, if the cost goes up and up and up, and that's per board soil test,
right?
So again, you have to pay for that.
So yeah. It would be
the
at the moment the cost, the person using the soil, the space is paying for it?
That's correct.
Okay, so
that's
not true. That's consumer to do that. So maybe this is a place where the Investment Act could invest to
lower
the toxicity. Because you're asking children to go on these sites, right?
Correct.
And learn this and pass on all of this farming, whatever they're doing there, to pass it on to the next generation. We have to make it safe.
So I completely agree.
It would be great if with whoever we can find, we can just have these certificates for the spaces done once, because they're not going to have industrial contamination anymore once we've done it once. And let people go to find a piece of land, they can get that certification to be clear what they're farming, what they're doing their urban ag on.
That's absolutely correct. I agree with you, and it's good to hear that potentially is a priority for the council members, of course, the soil safety, because that definitely is a priority for us. We really try to encourage the public to understand their soil. You should be testing regardless of the heavy metal content. You should be even testing to know if you should put more compost in your garden, right? You might be over-nutrienting, your plants. So the idea for most of soil tests is, for some, it is, like the back of their hand, and for some, they've never done it before. And so that's definitely is a priority for us to reduce the cost of those tests. Unfortunately, we're not the purveyors of the test, so we have to partner with them strategically.
So the state has $14 billion surplus. They can put a little bit to Penn State to underwrite this. We have lots of money lying around, and I think we have to be creative and ask people to partner with this. But if we have a toolkit for somebody who wants to start a urban garden, this, I would love for this to be a part of it, like a certification to say, this is safe land to do this on. So thank you very much.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm a gardener. I love growing, do it all the time. I live in Kensington, in an area that doesn't see a lot of green spaces. I found in my own thing that something as simple as putting flowers out on your street gives the kids a sense of pride. It makes them feel good. So I go down the shore in the summertime on the way back, I stop at the farms and I buy a flat set of flowers. And then we get together with the kids and we plant them. I took flower boxes and got them all over the block. You know, that's great. Also, a point of information, there is funding through the state. I worked on it in my past life with Senator Shute when I was his chief of staff. The funding, I believe the grants are up to $50,000, can be used for anything except payroll. So equipment, land, testing, that's all okay. So just for a point of reference for those who know. Would love to see more of this because I know that food insecurity is real. It's real in neighborhoods like mine. You know, we do the lunch program, and I know that if we don't do that lunch program, that most of the kids on my block will not eat that day, which is very sad. So my question is, how do we get more farms in the city of Philadelphia so that we can feed our own people? I mean, that's for me what urban ag is about. You know, a lot of our, this isn't, these people don't do this as a business. They do it out of the kindness of their heart to help other people. And feeding people is a big need in the city of Philadelphia, especially fruits and vegetables, which usually go by the wayside when you live in a neighborhood like mine, and most people are just going to the corner store and buying sandwiches, and you know, the tomatoes or anything they get is what's put on the sandwich. Our kids eating healthier is got to be the goal. And I know something as simple as that will also help drop the crime. When people aren't hungry, crime goes down. When people have food, the crime goes down. It's not rocket science. So my only question is, what's it going to cost for us to expand this to every neighborhood in the city of Philadelphia? Because we could be feeding on people. And I believe that that's the kind of stuff that the city should be doing. That's the stuff we should be funding. How can we help?
Well, you know, that's the question, and it's always funding, but that would be an answer that we would have to get back to you on, because we don't have any numbers of what it would look like to do this throughout the city of Philadelphia. So we can come up with what we believe a possible plan is, and we'll be willing to get that back to you.
Yeah, we'd be curious to see that.
Because I think we have to come up with what that looks like. We don't have what that looks like.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of different things that go into it, as you already stated. Land, of course,
it's the policy.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's the policy. It's legal access to land.
Right. We have plenty of city-owned land that we could be using. The only other question I have is, are there programs for people who want raised beds at their house, say? Is there any program that'll supply the raised beds so that we can actually do this in our backyards?
Absolutely.
You know, some of us who live in different areas have concrete, not
yes.
grass. So.
Yes. Well, I'll start with answering that question, which is there is a group, Bartram's Gardens and Cofa Community Farm.
From Southwest.
There you go. So you are familiar. Glover, Sankofa Community Farm, that's run by Ty Homework and Chris Newsom, who also do that work. And so that's being done, so not on the city side, that's on the private side or the nonprofit side or the business side of
right.
it. So those groups are doing that work in Southwest.
Yeah, Southwest has been an urban advocate for since I was a kid.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And then on the city side, we just started to pilot this type of work by, so we just wrapped up our pilot, which is to do deliveries to projects that are not on parkland. Can we deliver compost and mulching resources to those
exactly.
sites? And so we ran the pilot, we put in a little bit of infusion, we rented some trucks, used some of our staff time, and the result is we were so highly received that at this point the next step is, okay, well, how do we institute something like this so that we can do this in perpetuity? So right now we're just at the pilot stage of how we do that, because on the city side we're really looking at public spaces and publicly accessible spaces. So we have to be careful
about getting into the residential business because those are private spaces. They are not public spaces or public parklands, right? So I think we're going to have to really think about this internally and how we do that and make sure that it's equitable and fair.
Absolutely. I thank you for your service, and I thank everyone here for what you're doing for your community. You know, I fully believe in this, and I believe that we should be growing our own food to feed our people. And in a country like the United States, nobody should be hungry. And the harsh reality is I see it every day in the faces of the kids on my block. You know, so I appreciate you guys, and I'm in for whatever. I'll tell you what,
That's great. And can I say,
my wife won't let me put any more plants in the house.
Yes, and just one more factoid is that 70% of all of our gardens fall in neighborhoods that are making less than $25,000 for their annual median income. So we know that the gardens, 60 to 70% of them are falling in poor, working class, black and brown neighborhoods. And so that's just to tell you on the flip side, the impact that gardens are having. So we want to increase that. There's going to be more in positive impact.
You guys are putting out the soil and the mulch and all of that. When I said that, garden, dirt, mulch, it's expensive. You know, to fill a bed that's only, let's say, 6 foot or something, you're talking about six bags of large bags of dirt, which is about $60-something, you know, in the budget. But if you weigh it out on how much food and how much money you're going to save, I call someone along, I don't pay for a kid. You know what I mean? I can go right outside, pick cherry tomatoes, or pick new state tomatoes, and they go right back in the house, and I'm good to go. And you guys know, vegetables are not cheap. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilman Harry. Just want to emphasize, I'm struck by the fact that you just gave about 70% of active gardens and farms being located in high poverty areas. And obviously, this being a very black town, that's a lot of black babies there. And so, thank you again for lifting that point, certain residents. The chair recognizes Leader Kendra Brooks.
Thank you so much. I wanted to just say, how many people in this room are actually gardeners and farmers? I just want you to stand up.
Yay!
And before I started asking my questions, I had to do that because a lot of times when the rooms are filled, they're thinking like government folks here to speak, cultural organizations. But I know in Philly, we grow up. That's what we do, right? And we don't talk about it. It's part of our life. It's what we do. So I just wanted to recognize all of you guys that are here and the farms that I have not been to, I'm going to put on my list because I have been amazed by what I've seen from Roxborough to South Philly, from North Philadelphia to South West. I've seen some amazing gardens, some amazing farms. I had cows and chickens and goats and stuff. I didn't even know we had goats and corners and Philly. So thank you for all the work that you do. To Commissioner Slauson, I really do appreciate you taking time to be here today to see my second passion. Like, we've connected on my first love because you know I love music, right? So this is my second love. So thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of this. And just, you know, I know you're kind of new to this part, not part of, you know, Parks and Rec. So thank you. I really do appreciate you and the time to come to be a part of this hearing.
Thank you. I actually grew up on a farm. My grandparents were sharecroppers. I went into that business when I was 15. I went outside and picked everything I ate. So this is not, this in Philadelphia is new to me, but this is my life. We still have our farm. We still grow food. And so I am very familiar with
So I have some questions for you. Oh, I have Ash, thank you. We've been doing this work for 3 years. COVID happened. Trying to get to this point, we're finally here. The hearing is here and we're, you know, moving this forward.
So thank you for all the information that you've been gathering and building during building this Urban Ag. My question is, I know you guys have done so much over this last year, but I want you to talk about what is the work of the Urban Ag Plan and Parks and Rec, and what you guys will be focusing on for the next year.
That's a great question, thank you. So I think that, so what we're gonna be focusing on in the next year is that, so the plan was done within COVID. And so I just want to acknowledge that because some folks didn't get it, make it out of COVID. COVID, I think, showed our department how critical and vital having a localized, local food supply is. And then also, more importantly, there was so much mutual aid work that was coming out of the COVID pandemic. And what we recognize, I think, is that communities in Philadelphia and beyond have been doing mutual aid work for decades, they just didn't call it that, right? And so there's a level of sharing and peer-to-peer knowledge that we just want to support, right? So Parks and Rec, we're not here to extract or exploit the workers, the folks who are doing the work. We are here to support them doing what they need to do in order to have some success in agriculture. So for this next year, our hope is we're gonna focus on getting everybody back in the room to talk through a task force that we might call a task force or something else akin to that. But virtually, when we were doing the Urban Agriculture Plan, we split the room up, the steering committee was very packed into equal parts. City council, city people, so city administration, city council. Then we have nonprofits and institutions, and then we actually have the people who are doing the work, the gardeners and the farmers. So we want to put all those people back in the room because this is a 10-year plan and come up with a prioritization listing for the next several years, especially this administration. What do we want to achieve? What do we want to get done? What do we want to fundraise for? And so Parks and Rec, we don't want to make those decisions in isolation. We want to make those decisions on a community scale, community level, right? And a lot of the initiatives in the Urban Ag Plan are going to be community-led. So how do we support them financially or socially to get those initiatives done? So the task force is definitely one of them. The second is to roll out the Agriculture Resource Center and Tool Library. So that is going to allow residents to borrow tools from Parks and Rec to do community stewardship projects. So whether you're working on fruit orchards, gardens and farms, you'll be able to borrow a slew of tools, community engagement tools, grills, you know, barbecues, projectors, augers, shovels, brooms, whatever you need to get your job done, your stewardship done, we will be able to borrow that. And so that project is hopefully going to get released in the fall or the winter time of this year. And so the hope is that we would have a year's worth of public programming after that. So teaching people how to can food, how to harvest food, how do you do tool maintenance, all these different things that people need to understand so that they can do this work safely. That is another project that we'll be working on. We'll also hopefully be working on relocating our municipal farm. So we do have a farm. We do produce food on the city level, and that's fascinating and exciting. There's not many cities that are doing this. So we're at 1 acre right now. Our goal is to expand the farm and relocate the farm in Westmore Park and reestablish it as an education and public production farm. So building a farm school for our young people to come to and train with us and work with us. We've already started working with Powerful PHL. And so we would hope that we could open it up to PYN school district and other partners to do that work as well. And then I think, again, our hope is that we can build out the seed library. So I mentioned the COVID pandemic, because when COVID happened, it wasn't just food that was flying off the shelves. When we went to the hardware store, all the seeds were gone too, right? So we don't have a local seed supply. There's amazing seed exchanges happening in Philadelphia, but wouldn't it be fantastic if someone could go to the library, for example, and be able to borrow seeds from the library and return those seeds, right? And so working with partners at the free library to start thinking about collections for agriculture is something that we are exploring now as well.
Can you also speak about what makes Philadelphia's urban agriculture and gardening system unique? I heard that our city's urban agriculture scene is an international model. So talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. And I also honestly feel like you're going to hear a lot of that today from other testimonies. So I will keep it brief and say that Philadelphia is certainly unique. It is looked at as an international model, so of course we're here to sustain that work. In Philly, you could go to a garden and you will have people, for example, one of our gardens in Cox Creek, you have Southern African American people who are working with non-English speaking Korean community members, and somehow they are able to communicate and work together and farm together. So the gardens are one of the only places, really, if you look at our city, our different spaces in the city, one of the only places that are free, where you will see, regardless of ethnicity, class, gender, right, age, people working together and coalescing and planning what we call those third spaces. So this is the third space where outside of your home and outside of your job or school, this is a place where people can come to for free. That is what's unique about Philadelphia. The amount of cultures, there's dozens, you know, French-speaking West African people, right? Korean-speaking people who are refugees, sadly, from their home, coming here and able to acclimate in Philadelphia through a garden, right? And I'm talking about Birmingham Garden, if you've never been there. Philly also has Saul High School, Langdon, the U School, right? These amazing young people who are producing products that, you know, you may or may not get a chance to eat or taste, I highly recommend it, but they're making cheese at Saul High School, right? And they're making hot sauce at Bartram's Garden, at St. Croix Community Park, Bartram's Garden, right? So there's this beautiful way that we're tackling waste, we're tackling workforce development, we're tackling youth engagement, all in one space. Right, so that's what makes Philadelphia unique. It's very autonomous, and it's very community-led, right? It's very much so that the gardeners are the ones who are making their spaces, and they're also the ones who are advocating on their own behalf. So in this room, you'll see advocates here that are actually gardeners, whereas in other cities, the advocates are nonprofit folks or city folks or whatever have you. Folks are showing up and doing the work, and they've been doing that for decades now. Hence why we have Urban Ireland, because we have a strong advocacy arm in Philadelphia. So thank you for that question.
So looking at the map of the urban agriculture locations in the Riverbank, it's amazing how community gardens and urban agriculture sites are spread across the entire city. What did your department learn about the breadth and diversity of the urban agriculture in Philadelphia when you put it together in this particular way? And for me, I was really surprised when I was campaigning, when we did the work around the U.S. Bank buildings. Every part of the city I was in was affected by the U.S. Bank buildings. Right. So I was like, Roxborough, Mania, people like, thank you for saving, you know, this plot of land we were working on during COVID. And I was really surprised, because when I looked initially at only some of the addresses, I'm like, North Philly, West Philly. But to see the entire city impacted, I would love you to talk a little bit more about that. Like, how did you put all of that together? Or what are we doing to maintain that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things that I reflect on during the urban agriculture planning process is how determined the growers are in Philadelphia. When we had our first meeting for the urban agriculture plan, it was December 3rd, it was cold, and so it was the center city, it was at the Free Library, Central Library, and over 300 people showed up. And so I can't brag about that because there were people literally standing, not able to sit down, which is not my hope for a public meeting, but it just showed us that this is a strong constituency. And again, this is a sector that has been really largely ignored over the years, right? And so we learned that and said, okay, how can we be a leader in this space? And how can we encourage our sister agencies to do the same? And I think one of the things that we've also learned along the way is that, just really quick anecdote, I was stopped out of nowhere by someone who works at DHS, and she said to me, it was a black woman, who said, Ash, I went to Saul High School and I wanted to become a farmer. I wanted to keep working in the space, but there was no opportunities for me after I graduated. So that got me thinking, there's absolutely a disconnection from our, for our young people graduating from beautiful schools like Saul High School or Lankenau High School, when there's nowhere to go after that. When you have HBCUs and all of these amazing institutions, Cheney University, who have beautiful agricultural programs, but the connection from our city to those universities is very weak or non-existent. So who's working on that, right? So there's a lot in each of those categories. Waste. What do we learn about waste? Philly loves to compost. Let's leverage that, right? Let's leverage that. People want to do this work. People are paying to get their food composted. So how do we leverage that? How do we make sure that we reduce the waste? Philly has an amazing issue with short dumping. So how do you link those two things together? Environmental justice, short dumping, and composting, right? So all throughout the sectors of the plan, the people part. There's a people chapter in the plan because the people are the ones who hold this together. There's a land chapter because land is the central focus. If we don't have the land, then all of our efforts are moot. In 25 years, if none of this exists, then everything that we've been working on today will be moot, right? So we have to focus on the land. Those are a lot of the takeaways that I've personally have gotten out of the planning process. And clearly, the people are still, they're still determined. They're still showing up. It means that this plan is not going to collect us. I truly believe the people in this room are going to help us advance this plan into completion.
Well, thanks again for all your work, and I look forward to this partnership with the commissioner, you know, how we can move this forward. I'm always so thrilled when I see all the folks coming together around this, because I always say when I sit here, I feel bad because this job prevents me from tending to my land the way I should. So it encourages me to go home more. So, thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
I have a question for Jennifer Acolante. I want to thank you for all your amazing work in administering the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. My office has heard a great many of gardens and community members how these grants have helped their gardens and their farms or their neighborhood. What impact have you seen the grants have on those who have received them?
Yeah, I think we've seen great impact. There's some of the things that I mentioned in my testimony in terms of meals being produced, produce being grown and distributed in the community. I think it's having a community-wide impact, but also helping grow and support the gardens and farms that are already doing, that have already been created. So part of PFJI was, the reason we created it was to support, similar to what Ash was saying, to just lift up and support community work that's already happening in the city, versus us reinventing the wheel, but is providing resources and support and funds to support gardens to grow. They need additional resources, staff, equipment to help them to be able to expand their services and resources, grow more food, expand who they're supporting. So we've seen, like I said, more produce being grown and distributed, more youth development components, so adults and youth being educated as part of garden workshops. So education happening. PFJI also supports other projects that aren't just urban ag related, but I think we can share some more of our findings. We're actually working on an assessment right now to evaluate all of the projects as part of the PFJI program. So we're trying to break down the projects and show specific impacts from all the projects, so we can share that with you when that's complete.
The Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative is a rare city program that connects regular community members with grants they need to expand their on-the-ground work. Why is it so important that we make sure that community gardens and farms have resources from the city?
Yeah, I think I would just repeat what a lot of people, what Ash has already said. It's important that the city support this work. You know, we know a lot of the partners that are doing this and the barriers that come into play with some of it. Like I said, we've received 79 applications. to work in their garden. So how can we, even if they're small investments, help support that work and keep those opportunities open and help expand and encourage more gardening and farming in the city? So I think it's, you know, very important that it's city funds.
So some of the work that you do, what is some of the deltas, like positive you see results you see when the city acknowledges and recognizes the work of community members through grants? Does it enhance the neighboring community? Do you see, I know you said you're working on assessments now, but does it expand the amount of volunteers when it comes up around a particular initiative that you funded? Do you have any analysis of that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the...
So when the city acknowledges or support the work that, you know, with this funding, have you noticed an expansion of support from community members or a report back from any grantees that more initiatives, their initiative was enhanced because of the additional funding that the city was able to offer?
Yeah, definitely. We have project reports that the grantees submit at the end. There's actually quarterly updates that they provide, but they also provide final grantee reports that summarize the work that they've done throughout the year. And most of them report, you know, appreciating the funds, how helpful it was to help expand their programs, how great it would be if there was more available, you know, how it helps build their partnerships in the community. We've also tried to do more networking within the initiative to connect grantees. We had a partner convening a couple of weeks ago that was with just our nutrition and physical activity program, and some of the grantees came out for that and connected and networked with each other. So I think we're always trying to make connections to our other internal programs with other departments like Parks and Recreation. We sort of connected with groups and partners in those spaces. So I think we definitely are seeing benefits and impacts and hearing positive feedback from the grantees that we've been able to work with. As I mentioned, a few of them will be providing testimony as well today, so.
Thank you so much for your time and all the work that you do for our gardeners and farmers in the city.
Thank you.
And I have a question for Sarah Vernon Sermon. Good morning. I want to begin by thanking you so much for all that you do for the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. We are very grateful for your work and the impact it has on our neighborhoods. My question is, are there unmet needs that the Food Justice Initiative would be able to address with more funding?
There definitely are, and I think that the statistic that you've heard a couple of times now about having received $6 million of requests in the past round and only being able to fund $559,000 towards that amount speaks to how much need and how much of it now exists. We would be happy to administer much more to qualified applicants and if more resources were made available.
So for the $6 million request, how many applicants from that amount was that, you know?
I believe that was 79 applications.
And how many applications were you able to fill?
We were able to fill 9 of them.
Thank you so much.
And that was, I'll just add, that was with a one-time supplement, a private supplement coming from Wells Fargo Open for Business and CHOP's Healthier Together program. So it was an extra amount of resources that wouldn't necessarily be available on an ongoing basis.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know this has kind of already been broached by Councilwoman Ahmed, but I just wanted to say it again and have you respond to it specifically. As I understand, the reinvestment fund is what administers the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. Can you speak to how the initiative could be expanded? What more impact you could have with an expanded budget for that program? And this is again just your conversation.
Sure. If more resources were made available, we would be able to serve more grantees. Depending on the capacity of the grantee, some of those grants are smaller, some of them are larger, and so it would depend how much more money was made available on an annual basis. Part of what's important is the ongoing basis of funding, and so in addition to certainly being interested in more money in a single year, the ongoing availability so that organizations can be thinking, oh, you know, this is something we can reach for in future years. We're not ready for it now, but it's something that we aspire to. And knowing that availability is actually a really big deal in the work that we do. So that's something that I would also point to in this.
Thank you very, very much. Are there any other questions or comments from members of the committee or this panel? We want to thank you all for your presentations this morning and retire you from this moment so we can have a conversation.
Iris Brown, North Square Neighborhood Project. Martha Griffin, Executive Director, Mill Creek Urban Farm. And Justin Treza, Senior Director of Healthy Neighborhoods.
Jardín de la Paz, Butterfly Garden, Villa Africana Colobo, which is our African garden. Each of these gardens is fundamental to the community, providing culturally relevant and affordable produce to the community, sharing the story and history of the neighborhood, and most importantly, preserving the Boricua culture. And I want to share with you some of the benefits of the gardens. Of course, it's a source of fresh food. Of course, sense of belonging. And in our community, belonging is extremely important. Puerto Ricans, we have been in Philadelphia for many, many years, and we have been displaced. And in our area that is happening right now, so more than ever, it's extremely important for us to have our gardens for the many reasons that I'm going to keep on mentioning, and also so we could be proud, because we don't only garden, we only learn and teach our culture, and it's displayed all over the gardens. The celebration of Puerto Rican culture is another benefit, laughter and tears. We have one of the gardens, the African one, which has a storytelling room where we tell our stories, our histories, by us. It's not written by anybody else that don't understand our culture and our history. We create a beneficial habitat for birds and insects. It's a place, there are places to cool down in the hot summer months, and we invite the people from the community at 3 o'clock, they know that it's time to go there and drink tea. We have many, many, many herbal gardens in two of the gardens, which people go there to get them for medicinal purposes, and they also bring their own, we share them. Sometimes it's 9 o'clock and they're knocking on my door because somebody has an earache, and I need to go to the garden to get them what is we call all have a good heart. It's very good for the earache. Community gatherings, our 50th anniversary last year, brought together neighbors and support for a wonderful day of food, friendship, and music. We have cooking classes. Last Thursday we had one. We had 8 people in these classes, cooking classes, which are extremely important to me. My grandmother, she was a descendant, an African descent, and she cooked for the people that cut sugar cane. So my mother learned from her. I learned from her, from my mother. And then now my granddaughter and one of my daughters, they are doing that, they are cooking. For me, the 50th anniversary meant something else than to many people. I have been part of Norwich back for 50 years already. And to see you invited, I call them old men and old women, they are in the 50s, sorry, but yeah. Well, they went to Norwich together with youth, and they were taught about gardening and about their culture, but we gathered them at one night to see how this group was doing. We needed to know if our efforts and sweat and tears and laughter, if they helped or not. And that was the night where I cried and cried because the testament of that we had more than 50 of them together, and they were telling how important Norwich Grand Neighborhood Project is in their life and the gardens. We are often congratulated on how beautiful our gardens are and are asked, what is the secret of our success? Well, first, we had an amazing group of dedicated women and neighbors who worked very hard for many years, like me. Jasper Cedas, for example, took almost 10 years. 1985 through 1993, complete. And second, we are extremely fortunate to own most of the property that we garden, thanks to the city of Philadelphia. With all our success, we are not done yet. And we have many more projects. Every day, I have ideas of how to combine the horti with the culture. And I'm going to make somebody very happy. She's my coworker, Cecily. She said that I take off my glasses when I'm talking about how I divided the word horticulture. It was too big for me. And I don't know how I'm doing with my English, but many, many years ago, I couldn't pronounce that word. So what I did, I divided it into, I put the horti, I put it, and I focused on culture. Because people have all the money and all of the equipment, and we don't have everything that we need to do a horticulture, but if we don't know who we are and why we want to do all of these projects, if our culture is not present, that is one of the secrets, it will not work. We have more and more supports from the community and people interested in urban agriculture and urban gardens. Last year, for example, we had over 14,000 visitors, not 1,100, visitors who enjoyed tours, classes, and even cooking classes that I taught. However, Norris Square was not all on all of the properties in stores, and this is why we are here, including gardens that we have maintained for 40 years, and we still don't own them. Our neighborhood has changed so much in the past few years, with lots of new housing. Some streets are hardly recognizable. It is very important that we preserve our gardens so that neighbors and visitors can continue to enjoy them. So I am here today to respectfully ask for your continued support for urban agriculture in Philadelphia and to facilitate the process for obtaining ownership to gardens that we and our friends in other gardens may apply for. Finally, I would like to share with you some pickle and some hot sauce. And it's the recipe of one of our gardeners. His name is Don Anker, and he's 76 years old. And he taught the youth of the summer program and after school program how to make the pickle for it homemade. And we have some seeds that represent our work. They were grown here in Philadelphia. They are typically found in Puerto Rican cooking, and they have my name on the package. We trust you. And I just want to mention how sure we are, and how proud we are. And we know that the city of Philadelphia is going to come again in our health. We are making, this day, we are making 100 monarch butterflies, and they are made of plywood. And what we do is that we cut the shape of it, and then we have them, and the visitors when they come, like in the next 2 weeks, we are going to have visitors on the 16th and 17th, and they're going to be helping us design, color them. Why we have all these monarchs? Because we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of Norris Square in gardening, and we are sure that we are going to be, and that we are going to continue gardening and celebrating gardening and culture. So that's why we are making 50 extra butterflies because we know that those 50 years are going to be guaranteed. We still have Frontier Square for us to continue doing what we do. Thank you.
Thank you.
To the Mill Creek community and to the urban agriculture community in Philadelphia. Mill Creek Urban Farm is a sacred trust in which not only food is grown, but culture has traditionally been shared among community members. Mill Creek Urban Farm is a place where children have come to learn about farming, run around the farm, and spend time surrounded by nature. It is a space where community members are educated. In 2023, we were able to host an elderberry syrup workshop. These types of educational classes are not only designed to teach people how foods can nourish their bodies, but also to heal sickness and ailments by using locally grown fruits and herbs. Founded in 2005, out of the rubble of fallen buildings, the Mill Creek neighborhood is symbolic of the government disinvestment that has greatly impacted far too many communities of color in the United States. Sitting above a creek of rushing, powerful, flowing water that was not properly maintained by city officials, the mechanisms that were established to control the flow of the rushing waters deteriorated, causing instability underground, and eventually causing the houses above ground to collapse. Unfortunately, when the houses collapsed, several people lost their lives, and the community as a whole was forever changed. Vacant lots were visible where homes once stood and families once lived. Out of this rubble, community members began to use these vacant lots to build gardens, to feed themselves and their neighbors. Mill Creek Urban Farm was born out of this rubble and blight in order to grow fresh fruits and vegetables to feed the Mill Creek community as a whole, because no supermarkets remained in the neighborhood. Mill Creek Urban Farm filled the void and provided access to fresh, healthy, chemical-free produce for our community members. In 2021, our Welcome to Wellness event was held to offer healing to individuals and to the land that feeds us using the healing techniques of Reiki and yoga. It was a beautiful day and time for community members to come together. We plan to continue to have these types of events that promote overall health, mental and physical, to the community. Like many farms and gardens in Philadelphia, ownership of the land is a cause of concern. With the deeds being under the name of public entity or private owners, Mill Creek Urban Farm is also in this position as we're working to secure legal ownership on the land that we farm on. As I mentioned, Mill Creek Farm has been active for nearly 20 years. Many farms and gardens in Philadelphia have been active for a much longer period of time. The Mill Creek Community Gardeners have actually been growing on the lot that is adjacent to the farm for more than 30 years. The gardeners, along with the farm, need to feel secure and know that we will be able to continue to grow food for ourselves and the community. I ask each member of City Council to recognize the value and importance of these sacred trusts and to implement legislation that will secure our land for the present and for future generations that will benefit from the agricultural education and the foods that we produce for our community. Councilmember Harity, you asked earlier about the raised gardens being installed. Mill Creek Farm does also install the raised garden beds in people's homes in the Mill Creek and the surrounding neighborhoods as a result of a grant from the Reinvestment Authority and the PFJI grant. So that is very important. We thank them for that as well. Since the implementation of our Backyard Growers program, for the last 3 years, we have been able to install more than 30 raised gardens in people's homes. We would like to be able to reduce that amount to do 30 installations in a 12-month time frame with the proper support. And thank you for allowing me the time to share this information with you. And I look forward to having further discussions about this vital issue that is affecting too many gardens, farms, and green spaces in Philadelphia. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for the work of, you know, everyone currently involved with Mill Creek Farm and everybody historically involved in creating something so beautiful and beneficial for our community out of that government disinvestment. And I want you to know, you know, you're in my district. I want you to know that I'm personally committed to, you know, creating permanence, right? And helping you guys to get ownership. We'll be working with the council members to get there. Thank you. Justin Trezza, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Justin Trezza. Good morning, City Council members. Thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony and share the vital importance of community, gardens, and urban agriculture here in the city of Philadelphia, a city whose history is synonymous with breeding. Again, my name is Justin Trezza, and I'm the Senior Director of Healthy Neighborhoods for the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. PHS's purpose is to use horticulture to advance the health and well-being of individuals and communities throughout the Philadelphia region. We strongly believe in the power of horticulture to make positive social and environmental change, and urban agriculture and community gardens are facets of this. Everyone in this room is acutely aware of the challenges facing our beloved city, and that these challenges disproportionately impact neighborhoods that have experienced decades of disinvestment, redlining, food apartheid, and more. However, I'm here today to speak about the opportunities that exist and are afforded through investing in urban agriculture, as well as PHS's long history of investing in community managed green spaces like community gardens. For over 50 years, PHS has worked alongside urban growers and gardeners in Philadelphia to help them create healthier, more close-knit, and resilient communities. At PHS, we believe urban agriculture, particularly community gardens, are essential to our city's infrastructure and play a prominent role in addressing multiple individual and community social determinants of health, from food sovereignty to building meaningful social connections. For decades, these community steward spaces have done more than just cultivate fresh produce for their communities. They unite neighbors, preserve cultures, and function as a respite from the surrounding concrete. Each year, PHS invests over $1.3 million in our community gardens and urban agriculture program to support a thriving network of about 160 community gardens and grow sites in Philadelphia. This year alone, we're expecting to onboard about 20 additional community gardens and grow sites, and that's just a fraction of the total number here in the city of Philadelphia, which is estimated to be 300 or more. Our investment is what? As a significant citywide investment to ensure the vitality and success of these spaces, from providing growing materials like soil and seedlings, and these seedlings here are ones that we produce. Each year we produce over 250,000 seedlings that we distribute to growers across the city, to offering technical assistance and capital improvements. Since 2020, PHS has invested over $600,000 in capital improvements in gardens, as well as provided over $42,000 in mini grants through the PA Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. We also opened a tool library for urban agriculture where over 500 tools and other supplies are available to growers in our program and so much more. The money comes from funds PHS raises for this purpose from our members, proceeds from the Philadelphia Flower Show, corporate sponsors, state and federal government, as well as limited city support. Of the sites we work with, over 125 of them are committed to growing food for donation. These sites receive, as I mentioned, over 250,000 organically grown vegetable seedlings a year, which results in tens of thousands of produce that is distributed to food cupboards and pantries, community fridges, places of worship, and communities experiencing food apartheid. The need for this support has been put into high gear by the pandemic and inflation. As we saw the injustices of a broken food system and historic redlining only worsened as corner stores closed or families experienced loss of income over the last few years. According to a 2020 report by the Institute for Policy Research, during the COVID-19 crisis, the rate of food insecurity among Black and Brown households with children was nearly twice as high as those among white households with children. The lack of access to healthy food or food apartheid is a massive social injustice happening in our city and across the country that is not only impacting our individuals' nutrition, but also their mental health and overall quality of life. Gardens like Strawberry Mansion Community Garden on Ridge Avenue, Five Loaves, Two Fish in West Philadelphia, and Tioga Hope Garden in the Nice Town Tioga neighborhood are examples of community-led sites that seek food justice solutions, and according to Baltimore-based pediatrician Dr. Alicia Morgan Cooper, provide community-based solutions to accessing and controlling food that are humanizing, fair, healthy, accessible, racially equitable, environmentally sound, and just. The benefits of urban agriculture extend well beyond our local food system. In fact, creating and protecting community gardens and green spaces are also proven ways to improve public safety and reduce gun violence. Earlier, you all referenced some, academic papers, especially those by Dr. Gina South of the Urban Health Lab. I'm not going to go ahead and repeat some of those numbers, but we're all well aware of kind of the improvements that breeding does in terms of reducing gun violence as well as mental health. Though we have seen advancements in the support of urban agriculture in the last few years with the creation of Philadelphia's first urban agriculture director position and the publication of Philadelphia's urban agriculture plan Growing from the Root, urban agriculture, including community gardens, remains severely underfunded and threatened by factors like land insecurity. We urgently need the city to recognize the importance of urban agriculture, whether as a means to preserve one's way of life and culture, address food apartheid, or to enhance greening in our city and invest in the future. Residents of every council district and of all walks of life invest their sweat equity to turn vacant land into community gardens that build community, produce food, and reduce crime. Support services that these gardens require are few and threats to their survival everywhere. Organizations like PHS, Neighborhood Gardens Trust, Urban Creators, POP, and so many more that you will hear from today, as well as that you might not hear from, are working hard to preserve land and support urban agriculture and community gardens and the people that maintain them. We need your help to maintain this work. A simple suggestion to start would be to make the permanent preservation for established community gardens and green spaces a priority and to invest more heavily in grant-making programs like the Food Justice Initiative. We should support these spaces and the people who steward them and continue to make Philadelphia a healthier, greener, and more united city. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for your work. We love PHS.
Councilmember O'Rourke, do you have questions or comments?
Really, this is kind of a question for those who've already spoken as well as yourself and those who have answered. Do we see any opportunities for developing guaranteed job programs at kindergartens and urban farms? Is that the goals of this plan? Anybody can speak to that perhaps? Maybe I should ask before you sit down. The question is, do we see any opportunities for developing guaranteed job programs? We've spoken quite a bit about how this can help reduce crime, et cetera, as well as to maintain sustainable employment for young folks, rather than citizens, what have you. Do we see any of that potentially coming out of this effort? Anybody can answer. So, sorry, yeah. I said I probably should have asked before you sat down, Ash. It's really for anyone that can answer.
Or they are able to come over into the city. So that's our hope, that we do that there. We also partnered with Sankofa Community Farm, where we have two positions there that are allotted to working on their farm, and we call those seasonal positions. You all know, I think you're familiar with the recreational seasonal workers, where they're only working 9 months out of the year. Our hope is that we can get folks out of that regimen, because it's actually not a long-term pathway for someone to have a living wage plus healthcare benefits, etc. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can get our young people into introductory jobs and be able to build from there. So that's what we're doing on the city side. We're partnering with Parkour PHL, we're partnering with Bartram's and trying to Bartram Central Community Farm to try to build out having more allotments and positions where we're shared between our two agencies. And then folks here who also speak to that, if you allow them to come and testify.
Absolutely.
All right. Sure.
Okay, so
question is for any of you guys on the panel that can answer this. Can you talk more about the impact that your garden has had on the surrounding neighborhood? And do you think that urban agriculture and gardens play a role in public safety and community building? I think you talked about that a little earlier, so I hope you had, but I just remember distinctly you talked about that.
I absolutely do think that urban garden plays an important role in community building and reduction of crime. The neighborhood where we're located, Mill Creek, unfortunately, there is a high incidence of unemployment, like I said, disinvestment, and crime that does take place. So we are working not only to beautify the space, but to provide job opportunities. You asked about jobs. We did implement an apprenticeship program last year in order to provide education and training for individuals so that they would be able to go out and become employed doing urban agricultural work.
My next question, can someone talk about the youth programs that your organizations have? And do you think these programs impact young people that work with you? Excuse me?
The question is for anyone?
No, whichever, if you want to speak about it, you can go for it.
If I may, I'm Teresa Elliott. I'm the Executive Director of North Square Neighborhood Program Project, and I believe I could answer that for IEPs. We have two parallel youth programs. The one you're most interested in is called the Race of the Camino, and these are paid youth garden apprentices. They learn to currently we have eight. And it's pretty much a year-round program. They work in our basement during the winter, and they study plants, and then they grow seeds with grow lights, and then eventually move them. We have one garden that is specifically reserved for them to grow their pure produce. They recently just started planting tomatoes and onions. And then they run a farm stand in another one of our gardens. We are realistic. Their favorite part of running the farm stand is counting the money, but they also are learning to have customer service skills. At the beginning, you see them when someone comes up to them, they all kind of move back and hope somebody else will talk to the customer. And they slowly learn and gain confidence, and you can just point to an eggplant and say, what do you do with this? And they are learning. They're completely being exposed to foods that they are not normally aware of.
My last question for this panel is, did you have
something to say?
Yes.
Okay. Please. I would like to go a little bit back because the question that you asked before, if I am not mistaken, was about how do white gardens are safe or what do we do? Well, the reason why we have gardens in Northfield 3 is because our neighborhood was totally infected by drugs. You know, now we have Kensington, Allegheny, we have all those areas, but ours was, it was devastating. It was a complete nightmare 40 years ago. And it was a group of women, the women that I was mentioning to the group before, that by the director at the time, Sister Carol Peck, and she, one by one, she was able to convince Puerto Rican women to leave the safety of home, to be on the streets chanting to the people that came to our neighborhood to buy drugs, to go back home. And that was a way, and they were doing that every single weekend, putting their life right here in front to combat the drug trafficking in Northfield. Those are the women that I have the immense honor and pleasure to form a group that I call Grupo Amigos.
Thank you.
and motivated women. And they started doing this chanting every single weekend, and the drug trafficking went from the park, the Lloyd Square Park, and it was then on Bateson Street, the 2100 block of Bateson, was the capital of the drug trafficking in North City, and then kept on going north and going north and going north. So that's why we have the, we have all these empty lots, because houses were burned, houses were destroyed, and then we had all these empty lots that they were filled with trash. And I asked my director, and I walked on the street, me, with her thing, and then started the culture. Mm-hmm. And then came the culture, thanks to the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, we became the only and the last green country town, the only Latino green country town, and the last in the program. And still, we are benefiting from the efforts of PHS. Informed last year they came and they pruned all the trees that PHS planted many years ago, and they were just beside, and they are just gorgeous, beautiful trees that the community is enjoying. So that's safety is, it just, it was our reason of gardening at that time. Now we are enjoying the safety, the beauty, and everything else.
Thank you so much for the inspiration. Regarding the employment question and also Cheney University, we have been in contact with a professor from Cheney University to actually bring more young people into the University itself, into farming, and even expanding the scope of the farming to join some hydroponic and aquaponic farming, which is going to expand the employment opportunities for young people. So there does need to be more of a connection between the farms in Philadelphia and the universities that can provide that education and expand the opportunities for economic growth for them as well.
Thank you so much.
That's okay. I'm encouraged to hear this because as a one contributor to do an HBCU, a number of our HBCUs were started as schools for agriculture. And to miss that opportunity to create the type, I think Ash mentioned, there is a tight tie between the city, Cheney, and Lincoln, what have you. There's a one month through the year to create a pipeline for students of color, young folks coming out with a good education. So I guess thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you.
I was actually amazing facility that they had. I haven't been there probably in the last year and a half to see what they expanded to, but they had the fish feeding from the roots and roots growing on top. It was all up in there, so they had fish, but fish that would be there, and they fed on the roots. Of course, the plants were a little bigger, and it's really an amazing thing that they have there. It's a good chance to show the story.
Really great work. Thank you. Thank you to everyone for their testimony. We're going to move on to our third panel. But I just want to say that after we get testimony from the third panel, any questions and comments from the members of the committee and the presentation sponsor, we're going to be kind to our court reporter and ourselves by taking like a 15-minute break, and then we'll reconvene for the rest of the hearing. So the clerk will please call the next panel of witnesses to testify on the resolution.
Ken Jordan, co-executive director, Philadelphia Orchard Project. Professor Dominic Vitiello, University of Pennsylvania.
so I just want to acknowledge Council Member Leader Kathryn Richardson, who advocated for our organization for last year's city budget process and funding a group of organizations that work on environmental justice, and for recognizing the ways that environmental justice and urban agriculture are intertwined. And I also want to recognize Council President Johnson, who again recognizes the importance of trees, especially I just heard about his recognition that Point Green, especially, there's a lot of areas of the city that have a low tree canopy. And so thinking about it, just those ways that overlap as well. So we are a nonprofit organization. We currently partners with 68 different urban orchards and food forests. And there's a number of groups that are here that are our current community partners. North Square Neighborhood Project, Urban Creators, Mill Creek Urban Farm, the Cocoa Farm at Bartrams, many, many others. And we work with these groups and community members to plant orchards that contain fruit and nut trees, berry bushes and vines, pollinator plants, and edible medicinal ground covers and herbs. We've already again talked about the many different benefits that community gardens and urban farms provide orchards do these same things. But one important distinction is a lot of the things that we plant are perennial. And so for us, that issue of long-term land access and land security is really important because the fruit trees plant after we over 5 years. And so I don't need to go into all the reasons why these things are important, but I want to point out one additional sort of, you just mentioned Councilman Board of Work, jobs and economic opportunity, and our one of the items we brought in today is from honey that was produced from our beehives last year. And so just this one honey, one jar of honey is one from, it was 216 pounds from our hives that were tended to in partnership with the Bee Guild. We work with many other community gardens and farms around the city. We've given these gifts of gratitude to our volunteers or partners. We've sold them at pop events ourselves. We've worked with a local business in House Philly who's sold it and used it as part of her business. And we also donated honey to mutual aid groups that made medicine. So this, again, there's so many different benefits to supporting urban agriculture. I want to point out that there's top supported orchards in 24 different zip codes. We have one in each different city council district. And many others have already pointed out, a lot of these orchards and gardens are located in places where residents have limited access to fresh food, clean air, and spaces. We talked a little bit about what are the actual costs of these things. A single orchard might initially cost between $3,000 to $10,000 to install, and plant materials, but the really important ongoing cost is the people, making sure that people are paid for their time to be able to maintain these spaces. All the orchards that we work with, they grow the foods, POP provides training and education, but then they're harvested and distributing all that food to the community. So I just want to mention some of our other partners, Union Baptist Church in the 2nd District, Aubrey Arena in the 8th District. There's really all different types of places where food is being grown in different areas of the city. There's also many that are on city-owned property, as we've also talked about, recreation centers, parks, historic sites, and schools. And there's really a lot of opportunity for the city to support the work that's going on in these spaces, whether it's done directly by city staff, such as through our affiliate, or with the nonprofit organizations that are partnering with the city to run these programs. So in the urban agriculture plan, it is this really ambitious and thorough roadmap to a more just food system. And really glad that we're having this hearing today to talk about it. And I think just, again, emphasizing that urban agriculture is a way that we can become the safest, cleanest, and greenest city. Something that Mayor Parker and her administration should be thrilled to support, and with the support of council, can really positively impact our city. At least two specific areas of the urban ag plan talk about orchards and food forests, and names how our organization, the Philadelphia Orchard Project, can support these goals. 2.4 is support urban orchard planting and tree care. So that's through year-round training on how to deal with pest and disease problems, how to prune, how to use the harvest,
and printed materials, videos, all sorts of resources that we are currently providing to our partners and to the public. Another one is 4.12, developing opportunities for new city-run and community-led food forests on public land. As I mentioned, around half of our 68 partners are currently on city-owned property, and we really see that there is an opportunity to develop more of these spaces with the land that the city owns and could devote towards growing more food. Another one I want to mention is 6.3, and this is around building relationships with Lenni and Lapa communities to promote indigenous food sovereignty and traditional foodways. And, you know, we're all growing and living and tending to Lenni and Lapa in indigenous land. And we are trying to see how POP can do that, but I think it's important for the city as well to think about promoting indigenous food sovereignty and traditional foodways. POP was a grantee of the Food Justice Initiative and received funding in 2021 and 2022, and now hearing those numbers, I feel even more fortunate that we were able to receive that. It funded our Bee Orchard Volunteer Program. Last year, we had 28 volunteers in this program who received seasonal stipends, training in orchard care, and opportunities to meet and connect with others caring for the land. POP's Help Your Together program also directly provided funding to POP for that program, and we continue it today with support from the Lincoln Foundation and the City of Willoughby. As we've heard, the Food Justice Initiative could fund a lot more of this good work. And so I think it would be wonderful to see even beyond that $1 million ask have it funded even more robustly so that many more groups than dozens, a couple dozen so far, have received funding can receive this type of support. Just want to end by saying, you know, that food is a powerful connector. We all have to eat, and gaining the experience, actually being in a space that grows food, and seeing for yourself how just a tiny seed or plantling needs soil, sunlight, water, and time, and you can actually get something that is delicious at the end of it is so transformative. And that really starts with prioritizing land for long-term use, for growing, and making sure that we have the resources to connect with each other, to share knowledge, and today to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for everything that POP is doing to, you know, spread healthy food and access to our communities. And we look forward to celebrating you on Friday. Professor, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Dominic Yellow. I'm a professor of city planning and urban studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Perhaps I call you an alum, Councilmember, but I'm also very especially proud to tell you I'm a National Research as a former student of mine. I have one of the major lines of my own research for the last 20 years has been to study the social and economic impacts of community gardening in the United States cities and more recently around the world. And so, Councilmember Rourke, you asked a question that's actually written very good about Al Sandy, former students on your staff. I've spent time over the last couple of decades advising this and other U.S. cities and urban agriculture support organizations on food and agriculture policy. I garden at Manitowoc Farm for the last 25 years. That's in Councilmember Jones's district. In a 5 or 6 acre community garden that is on a 76 acre farm. That's one of the two large farms that Manitowoc Park owns. And I say all that detail just to stress that really I think our largest agricultural assets are in our park system, and that's where they belong. I think I will say a little bit about the impacts of urban agriculture, trying not to repeat too much of what others have said, a little bit about the history of urban ag in Philadelphia, and a little bit about what I and other people who study urban agriculture around the United States and other wealthy countries thinks, you know, we think, not just my view, but what we think really for health and equitable, accessible urban agriculture sectors in cities like Philadelphia. Because I think we've had a really, really, really human history of that. So the first thing I just want to stress is something that came with this as well. I think urban agriculture would be appropriate that the two city departments that we've been talking about today, Parks and Rec and Health. When earlier administrations in Philadelphia had tried to place urban agriculture more in a context of serving urban redevelopment goals or urban economic development goals, as in what the Commerce Department was doing, or sometimes other goals, urban is not that great at realizing some of those. And it's not always succeeded very well. When we've treated it more as really important social and in a sense socioeconomic policy, as in poor communities in the United States and other parts of the world, urban agriculture is a really important part of coping with poverty in a wide variety of ways. You all started very, I think effectively, but, and others have filled in with more details of the wide variety of impacts of urban agriculture. And so I just caution you and other legislators against trying to hold up urban agriculture in one of those sort of areas of impact alone, especially compared to other land uses. Take it all together, I think that's what your hands were doing, Councilmember O'Rourke, but understand the powerful impacts, or the power of the impacts of urban agriculture. You have to understand all these things that people are saying together cumulatively, correct? And again, I think health and parks and rec are very appropriate opposites in which to advance this work. I'll say a little bit more about that. So on impacts, my own work has done work to really quantify the production and distribution of food out of especially community gardens, which I should stress are the largest form of urban agriculture, particularly food production, by far in the public environment. In our homes, the largest form of urban food production, is in individual backyards. And that's one thing I love about the farm food support programs, is that part of what they're able to do is support backyard gardeners in the ways that the council member has been pushing. That's really important, to reach people extensively in every corner of the city. But in community gardens, I've done this in a number of cities, people have replicated it elsewhere, but in 2008, we counted, literally, not just sort of rural, but counted, and some of the gardeners here today helped us weigh their produce by crop. And I can tell you that in 2008, a while ago, community gardeners in Philadelphia, in the summer, which is not the whole growing season, produced about over 2 million pounds of food, which at that point was worth about $4 million. Today, it'd be worth well over $7 million, $24. And that amounted to about a little over 9 million servings of food that community gardens distributed directly to family, neighbors, and friends, and so on. And cumulatively, that's the largest form of local food, direct food distribution, that way out-produced and distributed all the city's urban farms and all the city's farmers markets that year. Okay, so really big impacts in a variety of ways. I would echo Ash in response to your question, Councilmember O'Rourke, about jobs. I've done this research across the Northeast and Midwest and the Atlantic, urban agriculture as economic development, and it doesn't tend to deliver what the Commerce Department is looking for, which are private sector jobs that are hopefully family sustaining jobs with decent benefits and companies that are going to pay a lot of taxes. Right? Mm-hmm. However, urban ag programs are really important economically for attaching people to the workforce, young people, immigrants and refugees, people who have been incarcerated, people who have been homeless. All of those groups have had relatively little success in traditional workforce development programs compared to urban ag workforce development programs. But the key here, the really important thing that you recognize, is that those job pathways don't need to work in agriculture most of the time. Sometimes in agricultural science, or food science, or food service, or landscaping, or tree work, which is a or a big landscaping bird, and all sorts of really good jobs. You heard my colleague Theresa Elliott from Barra Square say, young people learn customer service skills, young people learn about money management, things that are super transferable knowledge. Right? Everybody behind me cultivates a wide range of literacies in the community with whom they work, right? Young people, old people, people like me, like to include someone in the middle, right? Ecological literacies, culinary literacies, economic literacies, social interaction, cultural literacies, etc. I can go on, right? But those literacies generally are really important for people's employment pathway. But as Ash said earlier, right, farming in the United States is not a great job. The majority of farmers in this country have more than one job, which tells us right that the answers are on that one farming job. I'll send you more stuff later, but to continue that conversation. I want to say something hopefully quickly about the history of community gardening and urban farming in Philadelphia, which in some ways contradicts some things that Councilman Brooks, you said and Ash said in response to you. I think Philadelphia has a really vibrant world leading in some ways on part of other cities, right? Not necessarily, helping people. Super vibrant and wonderful urban agriculture sector, despite the fact that we've had a very weak, inconsistent set of public and philanthropic investments, and a very up and down history, both in our city government and in our urban agriculture support organizations, their ability to serve gardens. Back in 2008, when I was studying gardens citywide, with colleagues, and we were doing it in common collaboration with the Horticultural Society, Ag Extension, and many others, nobody knew, right, where the community gardens were in Philadelphia because we had disinvested, right, in our urban ag support system. So you read some very helpful numbers, right, but I hope you have my handout. If not, I'll send it to you. With a table, right, that shows in 1996, when the city government, through the Water Department, Fairmont Park, Recreation Department, Managing Director's Office, we're all investing in gardens, largely through Ag Extension and PHS. Right? We have a really big and vibrant urban ag scene, wonderfully supported support systems that fell off a cliff over the next 10 years. Right? And as you can see, we lost more than half of our gardens in the next 12 years. And we have regrown that. Partly because of the land security or lack thereof, but also because we've been very inconsistent in keeping up our urban ag support system. Right? We've had a very up and down history. Really, until recently, Philadelphia's city government lacked detailed urban agriculture policies, plans, and programs, right, to coherently and equitably support gardeners, farmers, and communities around the city. And we've really been lagging other cities in that work, I think. But really, fortunately, this is changing. Now, I'm happy to be able to testify that everything's changing. Thanks to the work that you're doing, the colleagues in Parks and Rec are doing, and people around the city are organized with their own life. So in recent years, city leaders, you have invested in the growing of the root plan, the voluntary program, and the Philadelphia Food Justice Initiative. And since together, to my mind, these investments that give the city first, a clear roadmap to build a strong city support system for urban agriculture. Second, the institutional as well as physical infrastructure in Farm Philly to provide growers around the city access to the material resources, the programming, information, and other things they need. And finally, right, through the Food Justice Initiative, a funding mechanism to assist our city's really vibrant nonprofit agriculture sector. I'll close by saying, not just me, but people like me who study urban agriculture around the United States, around the world, we tend to think in some ways similar, right? That in cities, right, cities with healthy, accessible, equitable urban agriculture sectors, right, tend to have significant public sector involvement and control. And really, it's where the public sector, as in Seattle, in its PPAS system, city creating system, in the neighbor space community land trust, which you might think is as an autonomous organization that's created by the city of Chicago to do the work of the city of Chicago with a mission to promote a more equitable distribution of community managed open space. That's how Chicago is described in New York. Community managed open space in a city that has a very inequitable distribution of parks in Chicago. The public sector, I think, is really key for making things more accessible and equitable, right, and accessible to everyone. Because you work, right, for the city at large. I mean, you have a district, right? But you work for the city at large, right? And for, you know, for everybody in the public. And the second thing, right, is we tend to look, people who study urbanism, tend to look at cities that have stabilized, right, land taking. And therefore make it possible for all of us, right, who are growers, to invest over the long term in building relationships with one another and with our neighbors, right, on the sites, invest in growing healthy soil, right, and growing medium, and many other things, right? Those are the invisible things that oftentimes we don't, you know, people on the outside don't imagine us like good investing in. So I'm really largely here to thank you for supporting this work. And for owning it, right, in city government, and what is really, again, a wonderful vibrant sector that I think with continued support from you all has only good things in its future. All of these folks will tell you all the details of that. I'm also really proud to have worked with many other people behind that. So thank you again, Mom.
Providing us with this critical information. And yay for urban planners, I love to hear about how expansive our work can be. Are there any questions or comments from members of the committee?
Thank you. And I'd love to see some information on what's going on in Chicago. I'd be happy if we could start building these appraised beds for all neighborhoods to have. I've always lived in low-income areas from the time I was a child, being brought up in the city of Philadelphia. And I always remember about growing up in Southwest Philly is how the people took care of their gardens and how just the presence of flowers and grass and stuff like that for a kid does something to us. You know what I mean? It kind of lets us to transcend some of the predicaments we're in just by the environment we're around.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I'm actually, you think I'm building, I'm going to be planting this weekend. I've already started, I put my tomato plants in the rain last week, so we'll do that. And shortly I'll be bringing flowers up so the kids can plant on the block. But it's just amazing how kids respond to things like that. So we need to be thinking outside the box on all of our things that are going on here, especially with violence and violence at kids and stuff like that. Having them work with their hands and planning it and then getting to see it grow and know that they did that, it's a lot better than some of the other stuff that they'll see. So I look forward to my colleagues putting some things up for this and trying to grab some funding for this. You know, we need more, and I'd love to see it more in Kensington, where there is a definite need for fresh vegetables and fruit. So I'm all in. This is something that I was brought up on. I've been in this business for quite a long time as a guy behind the scenes. I've worked for just about everybody, and Mayor Street was, he's still going. Yeah, that was his thing. In the 90s, when he was was on council and we started all that stuff with the urban ag, and then when he took over as mayor in 99, we started giving community groups the lots. You want to take care of lots? You want to do a garden? Okay, it's your lot now. You're in charge of it. We don't want to have to come back and clean it again. And as long as you keep it the way it's supposed to be, that we don't have a problem with you being there. And that's kind of the stuff that we need to do. I can't say enough, but we, as a city, we can be like this. We can end these food insecurities. You know, we all just come together and work on the stuff that we agree on and get back to the stuff we know.
Minority Miracles.
So thank you so much for your testimony. And you know, I'm getting to the point of the day where I'm having a lot of reflection. And I think about Commissioner Saucer talking about her family's farm growing up, and I think about my family too. No one in my family was encouraged to do that. No one in my family was encouraged to go. My family still owns the land. I've been here 3 times in my life, and never in my adult life. So like the disconnect between something that comes natural in our communities to the push towards something else, you know, whatever it is, it's kind of resonating on me in this space because I'm like, wow, you know, what we talk about the next generation,
right?
Or who's gonna continue this work. And one thing I haven't heard, not enough programming was young people. Now, I'm not talking about high schools. I'm talking about elementary school. I know that I partner with Logan Elementary, and they have a small community garden over there, and I connected them to Jefferson so they could get one of those hydroponic systems so the children could work on it indoors and then take it outdoors. But that's one school out of all the schools in the city that I know are doing it, and we don't talk about it. It's like a hidden science. This happening, and how can we connect our babies as young as kindergarten to eighth grade to the science, right? To make it a part of living. You know, I think about my dad who's gonna say, you know, you bring a man to fish, eat for the day, you teach a man how to fish, he has something to eat for the rest of his life. Why aren't we instilling this in young people as part of, you know, life skills and sciences? And it's as early as elementary, I get it towards the social development for teenagers, but I remember when I used to work in my family's garden, I was a kid. Probably because they couldn't get down and do all that weed and stuff. They told me what to pick, what not to pick, and plant the seeds. My fingers were smaller. Hindsight is 22, right? What are we doing to continue this work? Because you said about the gap that happened, where I know in some of your documents you talk about what's the impact of our community and our city, if this pattern of reducing community space and even reducing backyard gardens, how will that affect our city in the long run? What have your studies said about that? After my reflection, that's groundless.
I think you made a really, you know, essentially important point about growing mass. Is anybody here from the school district?
How
are you doing? Were you talking to the agricultural organization schools and Fox State Farm?
At the school, currently I'm not.
You have to speak to the microphone.
Sorry, I'm not trying to be so disruptive. So I would just say that the school district is other, in a sense, you know, not the agency, but public institution that we haven't been talking about yet so much. We've heard from some one of the wonderful youth programs, we'll hear from more. Right, but I think recent developments and trends of growth in our school system, our school district, but have been very positive. Fox Chase Farm is the largest farm owned by Fairmont Park as a principal, as a new school principal, to accommodate the menu of the stuff. Wonderful, right? And I think, you know, again, these are our greatest agricultural assets, but Fox Chase and the hundreds, maybe thousands of public school students from Philadelphia experiment on a pretty regular basis. That's all been expanding. Saw in some senses, Lincoln became a more serious agricultural school in recent years. This is on the upswing, but we've also seen ups and downs very much in youth programs in the urban neck, even just my time working last 20 years or so. Another thing that's been very
I could add on to that. Hawk has developed a school-based curriculum that can be used for children from age kindergarten through 12th grade. We used to do programming directly in schools. We have about a dozen school orchards, but just the combination of the difficulty of actually getting classroom time available and COVID. So the resources are there. Many other groups have created wonderful resources, but I think it's the difficulty of integrating that time into what is prescribed by school district requirements and state requirements and such. I think there is really a lot of opportunity, again, getting the amount of land that the school district owns and has access to, converting blacktop, which will also help with heat island effect in a lot of different neighborhoods, and turning some of those spaces into outdoor classrooms where people can learn about the environment and can learn some of those science-based learning activities in those spaces that are right where they're going to school, whether it's in the classroom or outside of your after-school programs or their partnerships.
So would it be helpful for you, like, if you can continue to figure out how we can break down the barriers? Because as you're talking about this, I can think of various school districts that buildings that have vacant land that somebody has to come take care of. Probably someone's getting paid to do it. Why can't we change that into community garden space that can be a shared responsibility from multiple departments and community, to grow food? Like we talked about food sovereignty, why can't we make sure that young people are part of, investing in community? And so that's kind of
I think at least some of the community schools have tried to make more spaces available like that to community members, but I'm sure that there's like security concerns and who's accessing the grounds at certain times, that there needs to be some level of care towards that clearly. But I think especially for the community schools, I think are a good model. And I know the school district is working on how can they provide more greening, and what are the different city departments that they can work with, like the water department, sustainability to make some of those spaces available more space.
I would love to be a part of an unsiloed conversation around making that happen. We talk about how we can save money. This is a money-saving strategy, a community-building strategy, a youth development strategy, intergenerational learning strategy, health benefit strategy. There's so many things that you can pull together just by solving a small issue, like how can you, is the land going to be open for people to water on Saturday? That seems like a very small issue that we can resolve as a city. My last question for this panel, what are some of the largest threats facing community gardens and urban farms?
Broken record here.